So it's good to meet you. Thanks
Yeah.
for coming on my stream last night, by the way.
Absolutely. I found out about you by way of I don't know if you know about DJ Kimball Collins's show on Twitch, Blitz TV. But
I do. How did that happen?
First of all, in case anybody's wondering, I am welcoming DJ Ariane right here. DJ Ariane Cullenbrander onto the show today. And we're going to
DJ
talk.
Ariane V.
Yeah. And we're going to be talking about, she has a show on Twitch, Alterna Wave with DJ Ariane. And she's fantastic. And I have her on the show today to talk all about, her start in the, basically in the world of DJing, going all the way back to her college roots and, beyond. So with that being said, in case you're wondering who I was speaking to at the moment.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to carry on and try to dispel it all, because I've still got it in my head what I've done. I'm not that old.
Yeah. I was we were just talking about how I was introduced to DJ Kimball Collins's show Blitz TV, correct? And that was by way of basically, there is a place in downtown Orlando known as Independent Bar. Once was called Barbarella, now it's called Barbarella again. And he DJed there, and he's DJed in the downtown Orlando area for a long time. So he just by way of meeting him in person throughout the last handful of years in that way. And then once COVID hit, he began his own show through Twitch, streaming his own DJ curated playlist with music videos and whatnot, a lot of deep cuts and wonderful stuff from the underground, post-punk wise. And a lot of people tagged on during 2020, and I was one of those people that became fond of this show, Blitz TV. And through that, I've encountered your show, which is incredible as well.
Well, thank you very much. I've been going since March. It's an interesting story, if you're ready to hear it, how this all came to be. Well, I mean, to go way back in the 80s, I was a college DJ at KLA, which is a UCLA-based student radio station, which actually only exists now on internet. It was a terrestrial station, and UCLA ran it. And gosh, okay, so I was dating a guy. It's always a guy, another DJ on that that was doing a show there. And he knew I was into music, and he and I kind of got talking, and there was a very nasty midnight to 3 a.m. Thursday morning shift that was available, and I took it. And I started to head down there, and I probably had that for about, I want to say, 7 or 8 weeks. And then he couldn't do his show anymore, which is a really cushy noon to 3 in the afternoon Sunday show. And I took that over for a while. And I did that for a good several months in LA while I lived in LA. Eventually, I left LA and moved to San Francisco and kind of continue on. And then we had the pandemic. I mean, in San Francisco, and in, actually, I've lived in Europe as well, and now in Vancouver, BC. I've always gone and been interested in music, always gone to shows, gone to clubs. And the pandemic hit. And I don't know, are you familiar with New Wave City by any chance in San Francisco?
I'm not. Would you mind elaborating on that?
Yeah, so this is a club I used to go to when I was in San Francisco. Well, I lived in San Francisco between 90 and 97. And I've always been into new wave music. I mean, I lived in LA in the 80s. I kind of lived through that completely in real life. And I started going to that club. And when the pandemic hit, I noticed, I don't know how it came across, maybe on Facebook, I think it was. I saw that the DJs there were doing an online monthly party. I thought, oh, this is great. I can actually be in San Francisco once a month and check out their show. And a couple of people were on there or still on there that I knew from the club days, and many since new ones, because I left in 1990 for Europe. And I kind of obviously never really got back to San Francisco very much. And so I was on their show, I want to say back in October, and there was a DJ from Toronto that was visiting there. His name is DJ Dream Doctor, actually. He's done some student radio back in Toronto and some smaller clubs as well. And we started chatting, and eventually we started developing a friendship. I told him that I used to DJ for a radio station, and he actually has a radio show on a Toronto-based station called Flashback Alternatives. And at the time there was an opening, and I thought, oh, well, that could be interesting. And he kind of inspired me, motivated me. And he asked, well, do you want to maybe do a collaboration show? We can each do, it's a 1 hour show, mind you, on Thursday evenings. And I said, sure. So in February, he took a half hour. I took a half hour. We made the show. The owner of the station was on at the time, heard the show, and invited me to have a slot. So boom, I got to revisit my college radio days in one go, just like that, in one fell swoop. And so my show is the fourth Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. from 6 to 7. And the website is flashbackalternatives.com. And it's the same show. I do alternative wave with DJ Ariane, where I'm doing post-punk, new wave, electronic, power pop, new wave. And so I guess that started when in the very beginning of March. So I've been doing that every month. And so that went on monthly. And this other DJ I mentioned has the show the second Thursday of the month. And I've been doing the shows all along, but probably before even the second show took place, I thought, well, this is great. I'm curating a list, recording a show for 1 hour a month, but that didn't seem like enough. as luck would have it, Twitch is here. And I started a channel, and that's how I started my weekly show on Twitch as well.
Yeah. And your show is on Tuesdays, right?
Tuesdays from about 8 to 10. It starts at 8 and it goes to around 10:30-ish Pacific time. And it took a long time for me. The hardest part about Twitch is that you might start out liking one or two or three DJs, but after a while, you'll start to like about 15 or 20 DJs. And it's going to come down to when is the best time to stream. Everyone has a great slot. It was really hard for me. 8 p.m. is good for me. You know, we're on the West Coast. I've obviously got to make dinner at some point and eat. But 8 p.m. seemed like the right slot because I can get some of the East Coast. If I go into about 10:30, I can pick up some of the Asian listeners. And I just thought, well, it works well for me. It seems to be that people are around, obviously, are coming in to tune in. But it's really hard when there are a lot of other DJs on the on those nights and other nights, and you're kind of, you know, if you kind of have to wait. Another friendly DJ that I check out his shows as well on Twitch, he once said, if I have to wait until someone else is free that I don't want to watch, I'll never stream, because every night on Twitch, 24/7, no matter where you are in the world, there is a show that will likely appeal to you.
Yeah, and what's fantastic is your show, now that I'm tuning into your show on Tuesdays, I'm normally home from work around 9:30, 10 o'clock, and then on my end, and I'm in Orlando, Florida, so I think we're at a three-hour difference here, so I might, watch Blitz TV for an hour or so, and then by then your show's starting, so I can just switch from one to the other almost right as one's beginning to subside and come to a closing. I can immediately just jump onto your channel and watch your show or listen to your show.
Well, thank you. And it is really easy on Twitch. I mean, you have notifications. If you set up for the DJs you follow, you can click notifications once you follow them, and you'll know the little screen will pop up when they're live. And that's kind of like, to me, it's like club hopping, stream hopping. It's the new club hopping. And importantly enough, a lot of DJs have built huge international followings through this pandemic. And there's been a conversation going on for, I want to say, weeks now about DJs saying, well, asking their audiences, well, should I continue to stream? My clubs are opening back up. I've got gigs. I've got venues. I've got my residencies back. And I want to say at least 75% of the crowd is like, yeah, you know, please keep streaming online. At least keep one night or two nights, however, according to their schedule, because you'll get people. I mean, if you're in a club spinning a show, or, you know, it's one thing to have a radio station that's global, which, you know, I'm really lucky to have that. But if you're in a club and you're in San Francisco and you've got 300-400 people in your room, the people from Brazil want to hear your music, or the people from Florida or New York or Asia, anywhere in the world can tune in. I mean, assuming they're awake and hear that same music. That's brilliant. The amount of music that I've been exposed to, the amount of music I've been able to expose to listeners, it's been tremendous. And it keeps people busy. I mean, you don't want to think about case counts. You don't want to think about Delta variants right now. You kind of want to just enjoy the music. It's therapeutic.
Yeah. I mean, you have, as you mentioned, I believe you do have some, a great idea as to just how much of a help you and a lot of others in the music community, everyone has their place, but anybody and everybody involved in the music community is really a therapist for people who are going through, you know, any sort of trouble, whether it's external or internal, any problem. And I think that's really been the message of music since the beginning, has been the fact that it can be that powerful to many people. It isn't just like tap water. It's something much, much more. And I think people such as yourself are continuing to relay that message into the universe, which is wonderful.
Thank you. And I'm not a club DJ. I mean, I am a radio DJ. I know that. People have told me by the style of the way I spin shows. So, I mean, unless I go into a radio station here in Vancouver, I'm pretty much going to be a virtual DJ. And it works great for me because people come in and chat and say, oh man, I've had a crappy day. This song is great. Or, you know, that the nice thing about Twitch is that as a streamer, you have a lot of visual components to your channel. So you got these little emojis, or as Twitch calls them, emotes, and you can design your own and build them as you build subscribers. So you can build an emote based on a band or a word or a fun little cartoon or however you want to do it. And people, when they get excited, they hear a song they love, they start to populate the stream with it. And it's kind of joyful and it's colorful. And when they go on other streams and they subscribe to you, those things will go into other streams. So it also kind of builds a brand. People are like, oh, that's a really cool Marky Smith emote. Where'd that come from? I've had people actually subscribe, including other DJs, based on the fact that I have a Mark E. Smith emote from the fall in my collection.
That's fantastic. So,
yeah. So it's been great. I mean, and people are home. People are still working from home. I know people that come on and onto the stream, and I have this little lurk and work kind of emote written out in big letters, and people actually lurk. I mean, that's a big thing now, work and lurk or exclamation lurk. That's almost become a thing now on Twitch because so many people are home. The work from home thing is becoming a post-pandemic reality. And people just love to have a little background, even if it's background tunage, or they want to engage in chat for a few minutes and go off to a meeting. I mean, it's there. It's always, there's an option. You can always mute it if you have to take a meeting. But I think it's great. I mean, if there's a shining light from the pandemic, it's the fact that you can, I mean, I know people now all over the world that, you know, that can hang out. People have invited me to shows. I mean, you know, as travel opens up, it's great opportunities for the listeners as well as the DJs, actually.
Absolutely. Before I continue, I just wanted to get this out of the way. There's different ways of pronouncing, a couple different ways of pronouncing your name. What is the correct way that I can pronounce your name so that I don't sound like a buffoon?
Well, it's Arion. I have these little, radio spots from Flashback Alternatives is computer generated. So I'll get DJ Arion. Arion would be great. I know it's hard.
It's a lot.
Thank you for asking.
Absolutely. Cause I mean, that's 101. Certain people have different pronunciations. It could be the simplest thing, but to me that makes all the difference. So Arion,
thank you. And you're Max, just pronounce Max, right?
Yes, that's it. There is no way of deviating from that, really. But I have to, if you wouldn't mind going back to your roots for me for a sec, as far as what was the initial, that not a lot of people realize, especially the youth of today, realize just how important radio culture was once upon a time. And the fact that back then, before all these stations were bought out, terrestrial radio stations were bought out, we had radio personalities and big radio personalities on terrestrial radio that really had a huge say and influence And that lent itself into MTV, that big influence on in the 80s and in the 70s, as far as a DJ would mention a band, bring a band, bring an artist, play a song by them on the show, just because they personally felt intertwined with such a band or artist or song. And they played them and suddenly it gained some traction. And there you go. Next thing you know, a song like Just What I Needed or Working Man by Rush was being considered the next big thing. And then next thing you know, the band exploded. And I don't think that's ever going to happen again in that way. And it's underestimated, I think, how important radio DJs were back then.
That's really true. I mean, for one thing, I come from a musical family. My father was a violinist, a composer and conductor, and both my uncles, one was a well-known movie score writer, and the other one is a pianist. Only one of them is alive, the pianist. So I've had music in my world, in my being, since a baby. My father would sit me down when I was 6 years old and he practiced the violin. And I'd just sit there. He tried to teach me, but I'm left-handed. It was a bit of a challenge, but I mean, I've grown up around music. I've taken piano and guitar over the years. My great grandfather is actually, I don't know if you know this name in the music world, Naftula Brandvine. He was the king of the klezmer clarinet.
Yeah, that sounds very familiar.
He emigrated to the US in the early 1900s from the area now known as Ukraine. And so he's considered one of the top klezmer musicians of the 20th century. So that was in my blood through my birth, through my father, myself. And, you know, getting into college, getting into high school with all the bands, the Cars actually was one of those bands. Like once I left sort of the classical piano background when I was younger, I moved right to rock music. And the Cars entering high school, that was just the one thing when that first album hit, that was kind of like the landscape of my high school years. You know, growing up in Santa Monica on the West Coast, that music was like the perfect historical touch, just the way the music was. And I got to see the Cars, I believe it was 1982. I think Nick Lowe opened. It was in Los Angeles somewhere. I think it was the Hollywood Bowl. But once, you know, you get into radio, you could take, there's two rooms loaded with vinyl and you're running around. It's a real high. A lot of DJs, especially ones that MP3 and digital format, they don't know what it's like to stand inside of a radio station and scramble around pulling vinyl, ones with little tabs. Maybe promoters have left a little tab saying, hey, please play track number 6, or it'd be great if you played track number 2. That kind of lifestyle, I don't think really exists. I mean, probably radio stations now, larger stations are all digitized. So I'm imagining that kind of world is long gone. It's so antiquated to think about being in a room full with 10,000-20,000 vinyls sitting there staring at you at all hours of the night. Yeah, I don't know if you have any kind of DJ background like that, or you've kind of had that environment.
My knowledge of it just comes from pure research and lecturing myself throughout my life, as far as seeing how it went and how painstaking it was. And it really was a passion and a craft. And there was a but through that, I believe that a lot of these DJs captivated. There was some magic in the air because it was a real devotion. You had to be obsessive to a degree to get through something like that, right?
Then you had a crate. I mean, everyone would bring, the DJs would bring a crate to the station. And I remember the guy that got me into the DJ world at KLA in Los Angeles had a crate, and I'll never forget. His name is Todd. I mean, that's like 5 million people named Todd. But he had a record I pulled out very curiously one morning. He was going to go that evening or afternoon into his set. And he had this black and blue. It had a really cool gargoyle on it. It was REM's Chronic Town, right?
Right.
And I remember, and I thought, this is cool. I pulled it out, and I'll never forget his words. Oh, God, that's crap. Put away. Those guys are never going to go anywhere. Ha!
Yeah.
Little did he know. I mean, that's like that band will go nowhere. Like, I'm thinking later, like, you think of bands like the songs like Gardening at Night and Million, how wonderful those tunes are from that first EP. Another fun story, in Los Angeles, when I lived in L.A., there was K-Rock, which is the big alternative station in the 80s. That was the go-to for all the new wave and the alternative music of the time. And a friend of mine used to go to the UK and pick up imports all the time. And she'd pick up things like Yellow and Madness, and particularly Madness. We, I don't know how she got involved or got in touch with Rodney on the Rock. He had a Sunday evening show in K-Rock. One evening we made it down to a show. We were invited to come on, particularly she was, because she had the vinyl. And she put out a track. I can't remember which one, from Madness, but he played it. Rodney played Madness. And that was likely the first time that Madness was ever played in LA. So in essence, Kim probably like broke Madness to the LA music world. And it was really cool. We sat there, Rodney's a very slight man sitting there talking and just chatting away about music as he does. And then we put on that record and I just sat there behind her and got to hear it. And I really wish I remember which one it was. But that's the magic. You create that kind of stigma and that kind of buildup for a band. And the band is now listened to world over. I mean, obviously they started in Northern London, but now, you know, LA got to hear them. And then they came on tour. I mean, they built up worldwide recognition. And yeah, I think now I think it's just MP3s. It's YouTube. I don't know how bands, I mean, they have to have good promoters. They have to have a lot of gumption, because I mean, a lot of people just give away MP3s on Bandcamp. Like they try anything to market themselves, and it's a sea out there. And if you're not in a record store looking at vinyl, or you know, if you're not on Spotify or whatever have you method of finding new music, it gets harder and harder. People aren't listening to the radio anymore like they used to. People are pulling into streaming services, or hopefully going on Twitch and discovering new stuff. Because I mean, that's the only way to keep the music industry populated with people who are interested in continuing to listen and appreciate music.
Yeah, it's a strange time, and it has been for a while now. But I think there's the oversaturation factor, like you just mentioned, where it's becoming more and more difficult to find certain artists or find artists just in general, because there are so many. And also just the fact that they're the gatekeepers of the music industry are pretty much gone. There is no outlet to provide you almost like a streamline of what maybe is something that should be on your radar and what shouldn't anymore. It's almost like a free for all now, and you just pick and choose where you want to go and where you want to be, which has its pros and cons, right?
Well, not only that, I was just, as you were saying that, I come to think of it, when, for example, the 80s, you had a lot of bands. You'd have Spandau, you'd have Duran, you'd have Japan, you'd have, these bands would kind of cluster around a particular genre or style. And it seems to me like I don't see like a whole lot of clustering like that. It's kind of cool. Like if you like Duran Duran, you might like Spandau, or you know, that whole kind of clustering. You could go to a club and the DJ would spin, and you'd hear all of it, New Order or Wire. You'd hear these bands coming up, and they're all kind of, they mesh so well together. Now it just seems so much more dispersed. I mean, there'll always be movements. There'll be goth, there'll be rock, alternative, indie. It's all going to be there. But I think back in the 80s, and I mean, maybe a little into the 90s with grunge and alternative, there was always like a kind of a focus, like, a, you know, groups would kind of focus on each other. And yeah, now, I mean,
there were scenes like the new romantic movement, and you said post-punk and glam and whatever.
And people would dress the part. It was a big thing, right?
Absolutely.
And there was one thing I was going to say about that, and it slipped my mind. I think, continue. There was one thing I wanted to add on. I just think it's too bad because, I know what I was going to say. MTV. You know, people can knock on MTV all they want, but when that came out, I mean, you had a video to promote the band. The song was the big thing. People would buy the LP or eventually the CD, and then they go to the show. It was a complete package. You had the visual component. And then you'd go out. Some of these bands, again, like Duran Duran, it was fantastic format because MTV brought them visually to the world. Oh, these guys are great, or they play, or whoever. Women would say they're cute. And then they put a tour together and people knew about them. I mean, that doesn't really exist anymore. I don't think MTV has that kind of pull. Not latest I've checked.
Yeah, I think we are gearing towards the avenues like Twitch now and YouTube. Those are the platforms now to It's really just about going viral now. I don't even know if part of the time it's really about the songs or the music itself. It's more of a can we have a flash in the pan kind of moment and just, you know, strike once and hopefully get some traction and create a moment. And that moment might last you, I don't know, 5 to 10 seconds, depending on who and what it is, unfortunately.
And also social media. Think back when bands, I remember, for example, Husker Du would come into LA and they would set up at Tower Records on Sunset an enormous, beautiful display of all of the, for example, Warehouse Songs and Stories. That's an example of a gorgeous design. It's color, it's got color, it's got columns, it's got plant, it's colorful. Those enormous foam core things were set up all through the store. The band came in. There were lines down out the door down the street to get autographs and meet them. I mean, you don't have those kind of meet and greets anymore to that magnitude. And then, of course, they're playing a show that night, so everybody's in line chatting and psyched. Oh, my God, I can't wait. That whole energy, that whole spirit of music and concerts and bands and releases, it's something so different now with social media. You know, we didn't have the smartphones to, like, snap selfies with Bob Mould. That stuff didn't exist in the 80s. That was just, you know, you if you were there, you lived it. If you had the concert ticket stub, you had it. That was the proof. There was no, hey, let me post this picture on Facebook, you know, with everyone else in the crowd. I find it hard pressed to go into a show now and not see all the cell phones lined up in the air when you're trying to take a photo. I mean, we didn't have that in the 80s and 90s, or at least early 90s. That didn't exist. It's a completely different world.
Yeah.
Either better or worse.
It was magical, wasn't it? The fact that it was a memory. It was and that made it that much more special to you, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you're lucky, maybe you'd buy a t-shirt at the merch table. And it's like, hey, I got a shirt from the show. And you'd see people in town. Hey, I was at that show last night. All of that. And waiting in line for tickets or horrible, trying to get onto Ticketmaster on the phone. But if you'd get into a line for tickets, and that was just a whole thing. Oh my God, I scored the Rolling Stones tickets for the second night. You know, they just added a second show. Like, all that energy. I don't know if people are, I want to say under 30, probably wouldn't even be able to relate to that experience. It's much like picking up a rotary phone. Like, what's that? Yeah, if you don't have a smartphone in your hand, it's like, what is this thing? This antiquated, is this a toy? And that, I guess that's just going to be the way that, I mean, that's generational, right? I'm sure we'll be considered, like, even the younger people with their smartphones will be something else in 30 years, and they'll be considered the dinosaurs then. So, yeah.
It's bizarre, though. For me, I think, I might be in the minority here, but a lot of the music of the 1980s and the 70s, for me at least, is there's this something preserved there that's really special that I think will stand the test of time. And a lot of those artists were so innovative in their craft and unique and in their personality. They were all, even though you could, they were all, as we were talking and as you mentioned just a few minutes ago, about how you could put them all in a group and they all would all line up nicely. But they all had their own individuality, which I always loved. I mean, you can't say Duran Duran sounded like Adam and the Ants, or Adam and the Ants sounded like Devo, or Devo sounded like Missing Persons, even though you can all kind of categorize it around a new wave post-punk kind of thing. But regardless, they all had characters. They were all special and individual in their own way, which I admire. That's something that I think is lacking in a lot of the newer acts, is that sort of sense of character and individuality, which makes them stand out.
I mean, I'll never forget when Devo came out with Are We Not Men, the Jaco Homo video.
Yeah,
I was scared of that. I was so scared of that when the first time I saw it. When I saw that at MTV, oh God, whatever the year. I mean, I saw Devo in 1980. I was an early adopter. That's the one claim to fame I have. I got to see them so when I was young. But that video, if you see it now, you have to wonder, like, that, what were these guys thinking in 1980? Was it 80 or 81? The fact that about, I don't know, a minute 45 in, everyone in that room is wearing face masks,
yeah,
and pounding on the table. And they're all wearing face masks. And you think, what would a person think of seeing that now? Like, it's so creepy. And so, I mean, it's futurist and it's prophetic that bands like that had that, like, devolution. They had their own complete like mantra and theme about them. And Adam the Ants had their ant music and the pirate shirts and the whole look that went with that. And even Missing Persons with her outfit with the chest, like the see-through sort of bulbs. I mean, every one of them had something that stood out. Even Duran Duran with their sort of new romantic outfits. I just don't think anybody, either for lack of trying or just it's the generations or the world has moved on. Yeah, I don't know. Those were fun times. I really wish it's not for nothing that all these movements are so popular, like the 80s for sure. So many Twitch streams are 80s focused because people, either the young people are trying to rediscover or the old people are rediscovering and reloving what they left behind. And I think that maybe the 70s and 90s, but I think the 80s more than any other decade is the one that really punches into people's souls with that sort of revisiting of all those great bands.
Yeah, it was, you were on the precipice in the 80s of technology being, you know, in production, being going on, you know, these new highs with the things that were coming out. And obviously technology being put to the maximum advantage in a lot of the production of these songs and this music in the 80s with, you know, synths and whatnot. And what you could do with sampling and sampling becoming a new thing in the 80s, even in its infancy. But with that being said, the songs were, I think there was always songs. Songs were still there. There was still songwriting involved and the songs were very special and well-crafted and memorable. And I think to me, that's why I personally love the 80s so much. It was that originality mixed with the technology of the time. You can call it dated if you want, but I love it personally. And just well-crafted songs.
Yeah. I mean, I know there are bands out there doing cool stuff. You've got Arcade Fire, you've got New Pornographers, you've mm-hmm. got actors here in Vancouver. I mean, there's definitely unique sounds that are cleverly crafted and are tuneful and are intelligent and have layering. But it's kind of few and far between. I don't know what the kids are listening to now. I think it's maybe R&B mixed with a little hip hop. I don't think they have this kind of wealth of music that we were treated to. And, you know, they also, I mean, you know, I've got neighbors next door. They're all just through university and you know, they'll come to me and say, oh, my mom is a huge Talking Heads fan. I'm thinking, oh, that guy's mom. So I'm basically into that kid's mom. But yeah, that the kind of like, you know, when bands like the Ramones and Talking Heads came on the scene too, that was so different in high school. I remember I was just right at that core group of people. I was an art major in school and in college. And I just remember the art students. Like it was just, I was just right there where I had the chance to kind of get exposed to some of that. But I was just a little far removed from that little, it was a very small cluster of people like that who invited me to see a band called Duran Duran in 1980. I want to say 80 or 81. And it was a school night and tickets were like $9.25. It was ridiculous at the time. I mean, most of the shows were like $4 or $5. I thought on a school night in Hollywood, how am I going to get up there? I got to get up at 7 in the next morning. They all went to see Duran Duran. I think that was their second time ever in US appearance in LA. Cause that they were kind of just at that cusp. Right.
Right.
So I was just there. Like I said back before that Devo, got to see Devo in high school. That was already for me a big deal because I could have waited till like 84, 85 when they were further along. But I think I saw them like right around Freedom of Choice. They had that, they had their little sort of togas with little wreaths on their head. That was kind of the tour, the New Traditionalists, I believe it was. And those kind of shows. And even now, I mean, check out next year with Cruel World Festival in LA. So they're getting all of these bands together. And what do you think? At least, I want to say 80% are from decades past.
Right. That's the big new wave.
Devo, the Church. Festival.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bauhaus, Morrissey, all of those bands, they're still relevant and they're still creating in their own way. But, you know, the people are going to want to go see Devo and you know, I can't remember all the bands. There's so many on that list.
It's everyone. It's almost everyone.
The Damned. I think yeah. The Damned's Bauhaus. And so that's getting huge traction. because again, well, people are first of all longing to get out of the house and be out in the world again. And, you know, they're longing for concerts, and this just stares them in the face. I don't know, I know the tickets were kind of steep, but Golden Voice put together this show, and I think they've added a second night since. I think the VIP tickets are something like $1,000. So people are really willing, like travel coming back, people are really willing to dig deep and get experiences musically now. So hopefully we'll have another renaissance of genre of bands. Who knows what's going to be next, right? If it's not new wave or punk or synth or goth, ska, another great one I love, second wave ska from Two Tone. I mean, it'll be really interesting in our lifetimes to see if something else comes to the forefront and takes over and does something and makes people remember. And maybe when we're like already walking around with in wheelchairs, it's like, wow, this thing is like a relatively recent thing. It's taken off, and who knows?
Yeah. A quick side note on that. There's a band out of the UK right now called Inhaler, and they, funny enough, Bono's son is the lead singer in that band. And they just hit their, they're the first Irish band to make it to number one on the UK charts in years, from what I heard. And they just hit number one with their debut album last week, which is fantastic news that a newer band are doing that or have made that happen. That's fantastic. And-
They're more rock, right?
Yeah, they have an alternative slant to them, but they're I wouldn't necessarily call them like they're not a rock and roll hard rock band, but they're in the vein of a lot of that indie rock kind of thing that's happening over there, has been happening in the last decade or so. But fantastic songs. I've heard several of them, and I think they have something there. So I'm glad that they're getting some attention right now, even if it's exclusive to the UK, but UK has always been a couple steps ahead of a lot of other places around the world with music.
Yeah, they have been. They have, and sadly enough, bands like the Damned are coming out with a big anniversary show, and I don't think they'll be playing in the US or in Canada, because this year New Rose hit 45 anniversary of the song New Rose, and they were meant to play in the UK this year, but that's been pushed back to February of next year. I think they're playing Manchester, Glasgow, Edinburgh, and one other town in the UK. Unfortunately, that won't come, but they're going to come to Cruel World. So there you go. There's that one chance to have some exposure in the US again. That like Bono's got he's got a talented family. His daughter is also an actress. So it's doing well, that family. Just thinking about Bono. But yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with music and these, a lot of bands. Killing Joke would be another great one to see, but a lot of these bands are touring or going to be, but they're limiting to the UK or Europe. They're doing European festivals as well. So hopefully that changes, because, you know, a lot of people through the pandemic have gotten introduced to these kind of bands for the first time. And if they come into the scene, there's going to be a whole other interest, right, from online streaming and online concerts and online DJs. It's going to be a whole other audience introduced to these people who now have heard about these bands for the first time and they want to go see them.
Yeah. So maybe last year there's a silver lining with what happened last year, and that I believe it made a lot of people, young and old, take a pause and pay a little bit more attention to music, more than they had in a long while, perhaps. So I heard record sales were a lot higher last year than they had been in a while. And I think that says a lot. So if there's a silver lining there, I say maybe it made a lot of people appreciate music again in a big way. And like you just said, maybe it'll make people actually put that care into action. And when these bands and these artists come around, they're going to want to see them, and they're going to want to, even if it's their first time. And I think that's wonderful for music.
It's a captive audience, right? We were all kind of in lockdown. So you better have some good books and some good music, right? Or maybe some Netflix shows lined up. Because if you're not able to leave town like we were for a while, you know, there's always restrictions in place for travel. And yeah, I think it made people smart. It made people smart and pay attention. And I mean, I've actually read an article that people are now making actually really meticulous Spotify playlists and such, because they have the time. you know, they're not being pushed around and want to, well, they're not able to travel or get out or do the other things that they could normally do. So some people have actually gotten really meticulous, you know, with books and with music. So, I mean, let's hope that's in the right direction, because once people are let loose again to run and be free, I don't know. I mean, there'll be shows, but people want to go out and do other pursuits, right? Hiking or traveling. And yeah, it's all been a very interesting 16 months. That's for sure. What's all happened here.
Yeah. So,
I mean,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to ask you, because you're in the U.S., I know a lot of clubs have reopened in your neck of the woods. How's that going?
It's interesting. I listen to like shows on, I listen to a channel on Sirius XM called, Feedback, which is, on a channel called Volume, which is like an all talk music channel. And a lot of them are in the California area and the New York area. And it sounds to me like things are a little bit different over there than they are over here in Florida. Cause in Florida, it feels as if, nothing really changed as much. And, now with the openings being that much greater, it seems to be doing very well. It's almost as if nothing happened or nothing did happen last year. It's very bizarre in a way, but, I maintain, you know, it's, you know, like anything else, it's got its pros and cons, but people seem to be doing all right, which is good. And like you said, I think everybody is just, was veering to break out and enjoy that social aspect of being together in a room again. And I think it's made people not take that for granted to a degree.
No. So,
wonderful.
Especially when there's these things looming in the air, like, oh my God, will we get a fourth wave? And now there's a big picture on, I think on Google News or some other website showing a big map of the US and where's the next hotspot. And I think people are just jumping to take advantage. Like they've got a window of opportunity to get out. And yeah, I mean, people are going to do that. You can't be caged up, you know, for months on end and not get stir crazy. So I really hope this time that it's in the right direction for all of our sakes, right? That we can actually get out and the cases will get back down to normal. And maybe the worst thing this year will be like a flu shot or something.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to ask you about your show on Twitch really quick and on Tuesday nights and how you've like, could you see a relation there? I'm sure the answer is yes here, but do you see a relation between revisiting your past as a radio DJ and now doing it through Twitch? And has it rekindled that fire for you in a way?
I think the excitement of just queuing up the records or as it were MP3s, because mine is a digital show, just curating lists going up there. I think, to be honest, it's the same and different, because when I was in a radio station, there was no note taking. You would just grab and pull vinyl and you would find what meshed and you put it on the turntable. And it was all, you know, mechanics, you know, real controllers and everything like that. You play one after the other, the music, but now with technology, I've got the means to put together a playlist with iTunes and meticulously archive every show I've done. So I know every song I've ever done in every show till now. You know, I've done a few dozen by now, including pop-up shows and special events, and just gain a sense of, yeah, what I want to do next, what themes, what interest other listeners have. But yeah, there is a tie, because you are actually going out there. First of all, it's exciting to play the music live. You know, it's on the radio, it's on Twitch, it's live. If you talk and you flub. If a record skip or if a MP3 doesn't work, well, you know, that's happening live. So that excitement is something I can definitely relate to back from those days. But it is a little more orchestrated now, just because I have the means to organize things in a way that, you know, like I said, with playlists and backing up files, uploading shows when I'm done, which wasn't possible back when I was a DJ in college. I used to bring a cassette tape with me and I would record my shows that way. So like, I don't have an MP3, but guess what? I've got a cassette now and I've got several still upstairs in a box in storage. But that was that was how I would take shows home with me. Otherwise, they'd be gone. Like, there is no playback. There's no replay. There's no upload back then. So I can't, like, that part of it is not as relatable as it was in the 80s. But yeah, definitely the connection is there. Your mind is searching. It's a creative process, right? Your mind is, you're looking like what would sound good, or what's this song I haven't heard yet? Or, you know, those kind of things definitely go through your mind when you're getting a set list or a show together, for sure.
There's different, every DJ in the modern day has their own way of curating their own playlist and whatnot. What is your angle on that? Because I know some people are more meticulous than others. They might even go into their vault, if you will, of songs, and they'll remaster them in their own way. And when remaster, I say that loosely, because to actually remaster something, you'd need the original master tapes. And I believe DJs don't necessarily have the original master tapes. They're just working off maybe a copy or whatnot. But everyone has a process. What is your process? What are your sources as far as getting your songs? Do you get them from CDs or vinyl or what?
Well, I'll listen to Spotify a lot if I like what I'm hearing. And that way that draws interest and makes me, you know, get the stuff and set it up for a playlist. A lot of it is CDs. A lot of it's MP3s I've had over the years. I have certain genres that I'll spin every week. Look, I like new wave, post-punk, electronic, alternative, a bit of ska, power pop. So when I put together a playlist, I'll try and see if it's a normal show and I'm not doing a specific theme, such as ska, or last night I did a Riot Girl show for an hour to start the set. I will pull from those genres. And I'll just start to build a playlist where, you know, let's lead this into this. And I'm not at all, like, I have no problem going from Devo to the Cars to Human League to some obscure 100 Flowers song, or going from a real hardcore Riot Girl song right to the Smiths. To me, it's just grouping things and having that sort of, to me, just the sense of the music kind of flowing. It's not going to be that I'm ever going to put together a club set, because I'm not a club DJ where the beat continually has to beat match and go from one to the other. So if I see, I'll always take notes. iTunes has a very interesting little component called comments. And if I'm putting together playlists, sometimes I'll open up the comment window on the side, because it's a part of the interface. I'll remember a jam song that sounds like another song, or something will mesh, and I'll put those two together. Like, I think that sounds great with that song, or that song, that guitar reminds me of this one. And often I'll pair them up like that. It's a lot easier if I'm doing something like, maybe I'm doing a shoegaze or ska. That's obviously a little more easy to genre match. But I like, it's kind of a challenge. You know, I've got thousands upon thousands of MP3s I draw from every week. And I can find either stuff that I've not yet played, or something that I was going to play, but then someone requested something and I ran out of time. Sometimes I'll just jump in and cross off a song and throw in a request or two. And that'll change up the whole scope of the show too, a little bit. So it really just depends. But that's pretty much the process I use when I'm going from week to week.
Right. Are you noticing, another thing I want to get across to you, are you noticing through Twitch people, you know, you gaining an audience of sorts on your show from multiple places around the world, or how is that going as far as, like, because I know that's also like a new thing with Twitch, is you can literally captivate an audience from anywhere, right?
I think it depends who's awake. The time zone is a big part of it. Secondly, the people know that I play certain bands, so they come back to hear that. I've got a couple of listeners that really love XTC. I have an XTC emote from one of their albums, and they'll come because they know they have that to use. I played last night, for example, Riot Girl on a set, and a couple of listeners said, oh, is this sort of a regular thing you do? And I'm like, well, I can always make a mini set, because they took interest in that. I think a lot of it is music. I think people know what I play is a little more offbeat. I'll play bands people know, but I'm not going to play the same stuff, because I have the big advantage I have is I do it one night a week. I don't stream several times a week. So I can curate a little bit better. I know if you're spending 4 or 5 hours a night or during the day, and you're doing that continually for a few times a week, you're eventually going to run out of fresh content, or you're going to be a lot more hard pressed to come up with stuff you haven't played yet. and all that stuff gets played. I mean, I've played stuff before a second time. I'm not going that direction, but I think it could be really creative. And I kind of like to want to leave people wanting more next time. Like, you know, this is what I'm playing and this is it. I'm cutting it off in, you know, 2.5 hours. I'm cutting it off. And then I'll be back next week. And I take notes. If people request stuff or things I don't have, I'll often take notes and try to get it. Because then I know that if they're back in there or they request it, I'll have it the next time. So I try, however funds allow, to try to make that happen. Because I know that'll draw listeners back. And I only play what I love. I've got to say the one thing, sometimes I will get stuff that requested that I just don't like or I just don't find fits in the genre. And that's often a challenge too. Because I think the most passion you can be as a DJ is if you're playing what you actually love. I think it really comes through. You get excited about a song or something you want to play. And people kind of get that, even if it's virtual on a screen. So I try to kind of keep it like things I want to play. That's why I have 5 genres. Because I know within those genres, someone is always going to be interested in something I'm playing.
Absolutely. And I can definitely tell, like, your show has a personality to it. And you know immediately that you're in that specific world when you hear the songs that you're playing. And I only was on my second show yesterday. But it immediately comes across to me.
Well, thank you very much. I try. I mean, I put work into it. It's definitely a labor of love. And mind you, I'm not just putting together a playlist. I'm also designing flyers for upcoming shows, JPEGs that go. I have a slideshow on my channel. My MacBook Pro is not hardy enough to deal with video. So I'm not a video DJ. There are a lot of those. They're great. So I try to focus and play on my strengths, which with, you know, I've got a radio background. I've got good knowledge of music and I want to play this kind of music. And hopefully other people find that and enjoy it as well. Because it's a lot of, you know, you're putting together these things and then you're uploading the show when you're done. You're immediately looking, you know, I always try to record intros just so it's a lot easier when I come right on the show that, you know, it's a lot to, you know, get the stream just at 8 o'clock ready to go. So there's definitely some steps. It's definitely a checklist in my head every time. I find it's really worth it though. Because I've met so many people and so many people are appreciative of, you know, it's a really great way to be with people when you can't be with them in real life around the world. Because, I mean, Vancouver's got only so many thousands of people. I'm hanging out with people from Brazil and Toronto and New York and Florida, Japan. So I think that's fantastic. It definitely comes back tenfold, the attention and energy you put into it.
Yeah. And I have to say, it kind of brings back that feeling that was felt back in the day, probably when you had radio DJ personalities who would, you know, just showcase or have an hour to showcase their own taste. And it would get people involved and there was a community there and people would tune in just to listen to what that personality had to play for the night. And it goes a long way in saying that maybe, you know, outlets like Twitch are bringing that back for a lot of people as far as like bringing back that feeling of community in music. And also the idea of just tuning in to, you know, be involved in that world and hear what someone with good taste has to say in regards to and has to play in regards to music. And I think that's wonderful. That's something that you're rekindling a bit when you venture off into these things.
Well, it's definitely become more of a hobby. Let's just put it that way. And I really hope that people will keep tuning in post pandemic. I did it once a week for another reason too. I want it to be sustainable because I also, I'm a travel writer and I was so right up to the pandemic and things are starting to gel a little bit in that direction. So I don't want to leave audiences hanging. You know, if I have to miss 1 week, it's one thing, but if I stream 3 or 4 nights a week, that's a lot of shows that miss. I'm also part of this DJ team, actually. Some of the Twitch DJs have these sort of teams where they're all kind of paired up in a group. Mine is called Music for the Masses, and I was invited to join it by a Calgary DJ. His name is Dickens YYC. And I'm hoping that maybe that relates to maybe swapping out time slots if I can't be there once in a while. So far, I've been able to make it, so I'm happy to report for duty. But who knows what's going to happen to Twitch? I mean, who knows what people are going to be doing a year from now with online streaming and tuning into shows? Remains to be seen who's going to have the interest. Maybe, I mean, God forbid, you know, there's another lockdown. I don't know what the world holds. I think this technology is so quickly changing. And I mean, it's nice for people like myself who are not well-known club DJs or big radio DJ personalities to be able to bring this out to the world, but hopefully for a while longer.
Yeah, I mean, we can only hope, but, you know, it's things like this that are keeping music purists such as myself alive and well, and really appreciate it. So thank you very much from the bottom of my heart. And with that being said, I really appreciate you coming on to Sonic Dorms and giving this show a chance, because this is also a new thing from you know, my end. And it's really just about right now inviting literally anybody and everybody who is passionate about music around the world as well to speak music and talk unabashedly about music. So from all perspectives, you know, of music life. So whether it's DJ, VJ, artist, band, fan, just anybody who has a voice and loves music as much as we all do here, right?
Oh, it'd be great if you could have Nardwar on one time. He'd be great.
Oh my God. Yeah. I would have to try to reach out somehow.
Try to reach out, because I've been lucky since he's in Vancouver. I've been able to chat with him. He's got a lot to talk about music. He's turned me on to the Pointed Sticks, which is a fabulous power pop band from Vancouver. He's turned me on to the writer, John Savage. So I've got this nice big book there that England's Dreaming. I'm looking at it now. Just everything Bible about punk and post-punk. So we've had chats and he's great to talk about music. Someone like Rodney on the Rock would be great if you could get him. He's still kicking around.
Oh my God.
Talk to him about music. I'm sure you get an earful from Rodney.
I would love that. If maybe you can help me out with Nardwar at some point. I would have to somehow find a way to reach out to him. That would be fantastic. I really appreciate that.
I see what I can do. I've got his email. We haven't met for coffee lately. No, just kidding. No, I am in contact. He was kind enough to make me a radio spot a while back. So that was good stuff. The other exciting point, since my favorite band in the world is the Buzzcocks, I had Steve Diggle make me a radio spot for my shows.
Oh my God.
And that was, yeah, that came just in time for my birthday. He and I both have birthdays in May. So yeah, I'll go quickly. I had a Buzzcocks birthday bash. I did a show all Buzzcocks. I've done two to date because I can never tire of them. So that's always really cool. That kind of gets people like, oh, wow, you've got Nardwar doing your set. It's, you know, it's fun. They're happy to do it. You know, it's a community. But yeah, I'm on Tuesdays, 8 p.m., like I said. DJ Ariane V, like Victor, but really like Vancouver, on Twitch. And
anything else that you'd like to promote or that's coming upcoming for you as far as your endeavors in music? Go.
Well, tomorrow night, today's Wednesday, right? Tomorrow night, I've got my monthly radio show. So if you tune in at 6 p.m. on the West Coast and 9 p.m. on the East Coast, the URL, it's Internet Radio from Toronto. It's called flashbackalternatives.com. So one word, flashbackalternatives.com. And I do 1 hour there. And I've got a fun show lined up for tomorrow night, in fact. So that's the fourth Thursday of the month, aside from my weekly Tuesdays, which I will keep running as long as Twitch will have me.
Fantastic. Well, I will try to tune into that tomorrow, cool. Seeing as it's my day off, and I will continue to support you on Twitch. Love the show. Thank and I'm looking Aww, forward to hearing what else you got as time goes on. And I wish you nothing but continued success in all of it.
And you too, with your show. I'll definitely get in touch with Nardwar. I'll let you know if that can happen. It'd be great.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that, Ariane. And we'll talk soon. Hopefully, maybe at some point I'll have you back on if you'd like to come back on, and we can do something maybe a little bit more specific on an artist. And who knows?
Sure.
If you're
of course.
Into it. Fantastic. Like Thank you so much, Ariane. All
Thanks,
the best.
Max. Have a great afternoon. Take care. Thanks again for having me.
Of course.
Bye now.
Later.